This is KAZU Pacific Grove, Monterey Bay Public Radio. My name is Mae Brussel. The title of the broadcast is World Watchers. Before I begin the program, I want to say the views expressed here are those of myself and do not necessarily reflect the views of KAZU staff or board of directors. This hour, World Watchers, is made possible in part by Aries Arts in the heart of Capitola Village, serving Santa Cruz's consciousness for over 20 years. As I said, my name is Mae Brussel. This is program number 844 of World Watchers, February the 8th, 1988. There are always new listeners to World Watchers. I have a habit of assuming that you're old friends, that you've listened for years, and I go on that format most of the time. The assumption is ridiculous. I apologize. I don't go backwards for what we've done before, but I apologize for assuming that you're used to the format. The format is new. It's not like usual broadcasts. It is outlined, but it isn't written out because I want to understand and share with you without reading a script. It is very open and direct. If you have any questions about the speed or the names, write the names down. Bibliography sheets are available if you send a self-addressed stamped envelope to Mae Brussel, P.O. Box 22511, self-addressed stamped envelope, and it's Carmel 93921. If you want information on how to order back broadcasts, they are available going back from 1977 to the present. The broadcasts are available. I've been on the air since 1971. But that is enough to go back. I would like to make the others available sometime, but they aren't yet at this time. So I do want to say that if you're new or if you're an old listener that used to listen and lived out of town and then moved in the area, I hear a lot from people who begin subscribing, who've missed the program for several years and want to partake of it now. Write to me and I'll tell you how to get the bibliography sheets or the broadcast. There are a few items that I want to run through quickly. They deserve a lot of time, but I'm going through them just quickly because I don't want to pass them up, and maybe I'll do more later. One has to do, the title of the article is Savage, Baffling Attack on a Couple in a Berkeley Home. A popular University of California professor and his wife were brutally beaten on their heads. Both of them were left for dead. Dr. Robert Michelle and his wife Barbara were she was in a coma. He couldn't speak, but his eyes were open. This was in the San Francisco Chronicle, February the 2nd, 1988. They were attacked at 3 o'clock by an assailant with a blunt instrument that was in their apartment, seemed to be known to them, severely beaten. Dr. Michelle works in the laboratory at UC California in the Department of Immunology. UC officials said his colleagues were absolutely flabbergasted at the attack. And this is the important sense I want to share with you now. Dr. Ann Good, vice chairman of the microbiology and immunology department, said, "It seems to be totally out of the blue and makes no sense whatever. It seems to be an act of random violence. And these random attacks all too often hit people who are benefiting society." Now, in my 23 years of research, this is one of the few times that I have seen it expressed in writing by a friend of persons who've been attacked or even people who've been killed. The connections are not being made except for the major, if there's a major or minor, and that's impossible, but connections are made between the murder of John Kennedy, Robert Kennedy, Martin Luther King for various reasons. But if I have one contribution to leave for my 23 years research, I believe it is the compilation of books and articles of death squads in this country identical to El Salvador, Guatemala, Chile, Argentina, around the world, in Germany prior to World War II, in Japan prior to World War II. The death squads continued by the same people to wipe out the labor leaders, the voices of protest, the artists, the writers, the creative people in our society. And what I'm putting together in my files and hopefully get into some computerized form and make it available are those people who all too often are hit, who are benefiting society. The article said that in his busy research and teaching as a professor of immunology, he found time to bring into his laboratory minority and disadvantaged students from local high schools. He was also instrumental in getting minority students into the Department of Programs at UCB. So he was working with blacks and minority. He was working on the immune system, and there's a lot of literature, more coming out all the time, about AIDS being a genetically altered, a biological disease done by the government as a warfare weapon. The article goes on to say his backgrounds were at Stanford University, the National Cancer Center in Bethesda, Maryland, Scripps Clinic in La Jolla, and during the 60s and 70s, he was known as press representative for the Faculty Peace Committee, a group of UC professors opposed to the war in Vietnam, and they were bludgeoned practically to death. I haven't seen an obituary. They may survive this, but this was just one day before the vote on the Iran-Contra affair. Another small article, and I do suggest you listeners from coast to coast or even in Europe or wherever, start saving obituaries and look at the age and see what the person was doing and scotch tape them to a piece of paper and save them for a few months and then send them to me. This was an obituary from the Washington Post. Travers J. Bell Jr., 46, founder of the only black-owned member firm of the New York Stock Exchange, died January 25th at his home in New York City after an apparent heart attack. There's a rampant epidemic of apparent heart attacks. He started the Wall Street security firm of Daniels and Bell in 1971 with $175,000. The company grew to the net worth of $15 million, specializing in underwriting securities of minority-owned businesses, and there aren't many of those people writing the securities for minority-owned businesses. Now, another subject that I've done on past broadcasts, and I hate to rush through this so quickly, but you can get the tapes going back to January 26, 1986, has to do with a company called Advanced Genetic Sciences that wanted for the first time in the history of their experiences or anyone else to test genetically altered bacteria on farms in Monterey County and strawberry plants. The operation was called Frostban. And I went to the hearings of the Board of Supervisors and had done homework on the people, the board of directors that formed AGS and the company, and realized that their links were very close tied to those of IG Farben, to experiments in Europe, and thought that this possibly was a way to test the immune system of farm workers, the Mexican farm workers right here in Monterey County. And they moved their operations out of Monterey County, but I based it also on information and documents I had that the Environmental Protection Agency had given permission to put a substance on material that Mexican farm workers were working with in the United States that could cause cancer, testing on how to give Mexicans cancer. And when somebody caught on to that, it was moved south of the border. This article is from the Washington Post, January 23, 1988. 17 Argentine infected by experimental vaccine. Organism was genetically engineered. 17 farm workers working in Argentina were working. The cows were given this genetically altered vaccine, and by working with the cows on the farm, they became infected through these tests that the animals were getting. The company that was doing the operation was Wistar Institute, affiliated with the University of Pennsylvania, with funding from the National Institute of Health, the same group that go along with AGS and the genetic testing. It was carried out by Pan Health organizations. The combination of virus was intended to fool the body's immune system into thinking rabies was present and making a defense against it. Vaccine is normally quite difficult to spread, usually requiring direct contact with an open sore. But in this case, the Argentine Minister of Health and Social Action said that the serological study done on 17 people, they had a different degree of exposure and contact, and the people have developed antibodies against the rabies, allegedly, but they got it from just being with animals that were given this experiment. The experiment was carried out with the permission of the Argentine government, but it doesn't say with the permission of the 17 farm workers or more that got the consequences. Wistar was also charged with taking the experiment abroad to circumvent safety guidelines in the United States. That's exactly what I was talking about, how this is done here, but people in the United States catch on, they take it abroad and give these poor people and farm workers and the people not privileged enough to read newspapers and know what's going on, they do the experiment. The article says a still unresolved issue that is being considered by a committee of the National Institute of Health is whether the U.S. companies and researchers should be held to the same federal ethical and safety standards in such experiments. If you can't do them at home, can you do them overseas? Wistar got more than $3 million in funds from National Institute of Health to work on these vaccines. After looking into the case, NIH ruled out that because the experiment itself was not paid for with government money, and I don't know the difference between National Institute of Health and government money, it wasn't subject to federal safety rules, and the NIH recombinant DNA Advisory Committee decided to consider tightening their regulations. And again, Jeremy Rifkin, who was fighting AGS and is a stalwart fighter against these type of operations done at home or abroad, an opponent of genetic engineering, filed a petition with National Institute of Health asking for an emergency investigation of Wistar. Now, there was a doctor that passed away this last week, and this is a typical obituary apropos of the subject I mentioned. He wasn't killed or poisoned, but when these people die and you read the obituaries, you realize we're the people from the National Institute, and I'm not making a broad collective, everybody, where some of them come from. A doctor named Thaddeus John Domansky, from the retired Air Force colonel, died last week, obituary, Washington Post, January 28th. He later, after leaving the Air Force as a colonel, worked as a research scientist and administrator of the National Institute of Health. He served 23 years in the military. He retired from the Air Force in 1966. Then he joined the NIH. He doesn't have a doctor's degree. It doesn't say MA. He retired from NIH in 1983 after serving as director of the National Cancer Institute. What expertise does he have? And he was in charge of research grants at the National Institute of General Medical School. He joined the Army in 1943, served in the Pacific, South Korea after the war. Later, he was assigned as Chief of Air Force School of Aerospace Medicine, Chief of Air Force Epidemiological Laboratory in San Antonio, Chief of the Toxicological Branch of the Armed Forces Institute of Pathology. He retired as an Air Force member of the Air Force, colonel, and then takes these jobs and gives the grants. The way that genocide began in Nazi Germany was with the psychiatrists and the doctors. That is historically documented, and one of the problems in this country that we have had since World War II, when many of the Nazi doctors who experimented joined the Air Force and joined these institutions that were formed around them, before or after them. We have to separate we collectively. It's a wish. If I had some wishes, I'm not going to get it. But it is a problem. Maybe some of these candidates running for office should be asked the question, would you separate the military from the medical and have these people come from renowned medical institutions and be on the Cancer Institute and not come from the Air Force, from South Korea or Vietnam or whatever, and make the decisions? Because I fear that these are the people, National Institute of Health, that he's affiliated with, these are the people identified as sending these viruses and bacteria down on farm workers in other countries that can cause diseases. And what goes around comes around. What comes to them comes to us a short time later. One other quick obituary that I want to mention and can't pass up, James Theberg, ex-envoy to Chile and to Nicaragua, dies. He was 57 years old. He had another apparent heart attack at Montego Bay. That's the home base of the organization Permandex, and William Stevenson still is alive there, a man called Intrepid from British intelligence that formed our OSS to become the CIA. This Mr. Thurberg was ambassador to Chile, 1982 to 85 with Pinochet, ambassador to Nicaragua, 1975 to 77 with Somoza. He was advisor to Vice President George Bush on drug trafficking at a time when the Iran-Contra drug connections lead right to George Bush's door. And he worked as an advisor in Latin America. He was trained also at Columbia University, Oxford in England, and then spent years, formative years, at Heidelberg University in West Germany after the 1950s. The CIA was formed in 1947. He stayed at Heidelberg through the 50s and then went to Harvard and worked in Argentina in 61-64. He worked under Juan Perón, Somoza, and Pinochet, and worked with George Bush, and he died a very, I think it's a young death, 57, in Montego Bay and could be a very important witness to a lot of the things that are going on. And then one other item, Pat Robertson, maybe you saw this article, says that Planned Parenthood is a, the purpose of Planned Parenthood is to have a master race. And he accused Margaret Sanger, the founder of Planned Parenthood, of being an advocate of eugenics. She and her disciples wanted to sterilize blacks and Jews and mental defectives. And Pat Robertson is running on the campaign issue that to have abortions is to have selective eugenics like Adolf Hitler did. And he's accusing Mrs. Sanger, Margaret Sanger, of being a anti-Semite, anti-black. That remains to be investigated. The charges that Planned Parenthood is to get rid of the unwanted, or the, I guess the useless eaters, as Adolf Hitler talked about them. Now, for the remaining 45 minutes of World Watchers, I'm going to talk about something that is very, very important. It's been overlooked in all the Iran-Contra events since Mr. Hasanfuz landed in Nicaragua in October 86. There are books coming out about the Iran-Contra and hearings, and there's a subject that I've had on World Watchers last year regarding the stock brokerage firm of E.F. Hutton and Merrill Lynch. And I want to take you one point further now to maybe one of the most important broadcasts that I've ever had on the air, and I think every week I have the most until the following week happens. I want you to get a pencil and write down the names that I'm mentioning so that you don't get confused by them. I'll spell them out, and I'll try to go as slowly as I can and get this story to you because it is very, very important. At the time of Watergate, when the men were arrested at the Watergate Hotel, Martha Mitchell made the mistake, or did us a favor, by saying the mafia runs is in the White House. For that, she was slapped on the bed, injected with a shot, and died of a painful cancer a few years later. The discussion of Noriega in Panama, the headlines read, Noriega sold out Panama. Noriega sold out his country to drug dealers. And I'll do more about Noriega and Panama next week. Noriega sold out his country to drug dealers. And what I'm saying and accusing this evening, and I can give you the sources and the documentation, and I've talked about it for a long time, is that our White House, our National Security Council, the people running this show, they sold out this country to drug dealers, also to the Waffen-SS, but to drug dealers. Now, last year on World Watchers, March the 2nd, 1987, that was about almost a year ago, this next month, broadcast number 795, and if you keep the bibliography sheets in chronological order, you will be able to reach this quickly. I hope when you collect them or save them, you do it that way. I had a program on why the White House Chief of Staff, Donald Reagan, had so much power in the White House, how he took control of the White House and the national security policies. And they were based on the drug connections of Merrill Lynch. Don Reagan was chairman of the brokerage house of Merrill Lynch, and he moved himself into Secretary of the Treasury and a Chief of Staff. And his connections to the drug traffic in Europe and the terrorism under the guise of anti-Soviet policy were the things that gave him this muscle. Now, I listed 15 reasons and connections of Merrill Lynch to the drug traffic. And if you send a self-addressed stamped envelope, I can send you this sheet. Number 13 was that Merrill Lynch Swiss accounts funded the Turkish mafia. Their money helped. Transferred money, cash, to the Turkish mafia. And this is from heroin sold in New York City and in the eastern part of the United States alone. That money deposited in the bank accounts, brokerage firm of Merrill Lynch and also E.F. Hutton. I'll get to that in a minute. Funded Turkish mafia boss Yasser Masalulu. Write that name down if you have a pencil. Yasser, and it's spelled M-A-S-U, Masu. Then Lulu, and this is a Lulu of a story, L-L-U-L-U. It's a mass, big Lulu story. And a year ago, I said that Merrill Lynch was putting money into the account of Yasser Masalulu, and that Masalulu was linked to Ali Mehmet Aja, the man who shot the Pope. I also listed the connections of them to Michael Ledeen of Iran-Contra fame and also the shooting of the Pope, to Frank Turpel, who trained Jean to shoot before he ended up at St. Peter's. Theodore Shackley, who was at Rome at the time, working with the Italian intelligence. The defendants in the Christic Institute, well, Theodore Shackley is one of the defendants. Frank Turpel was part of Stanford Technology Training Group. And what I said was that Merrill Lynch Swiss accounts went to Mr. Massalulu and were connected to the man who took a shot at the Pope. Now, a long listener to World Watchers, and he listens to David Emery and Niptek and their program at KFJC, gets Italian newspapers and translates them for us, and I've had some of the translations on the air. And he gets them from Europe and does a massive job for us so that we continuously know what's going on in La Repubblica, Corriere della Sera, and so forth. And an article that he sent to us, several. One comes from Italy, the trial of the pizza drug trial in Italy, that large trial that just ended, the pizza mafia heroin connection, had to do with heroin traffic in Italy. And then the pizza trial in New York, there were two of them, had to do with their sending the pizza through the pizza agencies in New York City, the heroin that was had been processed in Europe and was sent to New York City to be distributed in the pizza parlors. Then the pizza bosses would take their money and put it into Merrill Lynch and E.F. Hutton, and that would be sent over to Switzerland to buy weapons for terrorists. And the terrorists then would process more heroin out of Italy to the pizza connections in Italy to New York City, and they would sell the heroin on the streets, take their buckets of money, $1.6 billion when the arrest came in New York, and there were massive arrests in Italy. And two of the main witnesses there, a man named Badalamenti, I did broadcasts on him, and Tommaso Busata. Those were the two main witnesses that testified in Italy and testified in New York about the heroin from Europe coming to New York, the deposits going to E.F. Hutton and Merrill Lynch, and then back to Switzerland. And I had identified, as I say, last year, the man who got, one of the men who got the money, over $11 million, was Mr. Massalulu. So in the translation that Dave and I got from this friend, from the Corriere della Sera, this was in the pizza trial in Italy, dated June 18th, this past year, 87, but it takes us a few months for him to get the paper, for him to translate it, and send it to us. This is what the newspaper had in Italy. According to Paul Wardell, W-R-I-D-E-L, a Turkish dealer turned informant who now lives in Switzerland and lived there for a long time. He was in Switzerland. He now lives in Athens. He said that a man named Oral Selik, O-R-I-L, and then the other one is C-E-L-I-K. There is Mr. Selenk and there is Mr. Selik. I don't want them confused. Paul Wardell worked with a man named Oral Selik, who is living in Sofia, setting up drug traffic. Between 1981 and 83, that's the time when the Pope was shot, in 1981 in Rome, May 81, from 81 to 83, Mr. Oral Selik, who is wanted for an attempt to kill the Pope, along with Ajah, who's in jail, Selik used the name of Avni Massalulu, the same person, and he coordinated from his office in Zurich payments for deliveries of hundreds of kilos of drugs consigned by the Sicilian band of Greco and Santa Polo for the United States market. So knowing a year ago that the money went from E.F. Hutton and Merrill Lynch to Massalulu, it turns out that Massalulu is Oral Selik, the man who assisted Ajah to get out of a Turkish jail and assisted him until the point when they were both together in St. Peter's Square. Now, the next article that came that he gave us from La Repubblica, July 25th, 1985, earlier in the arrest when Ajah was being investigated, said that Oral Selik may have collaborated with the drug enforcement agency, that he worked with the American agencies and made possible numerous arrests in Europe, including Ajah's accomplice, Omar I in Germany. Now, I have an article from the New York Times, April the 1st, 1986. This article I'm going to share with you because at that time, Mr. Musilu, and I don't want to confuse it, was the man, 1986-87, that I knew worked with Aja, but I didn't realize he's the man that got Aja out of the jail, that he worked for the United States government, and that his money came from E.F. Hutton and Merrill Lynch. And the reason those agencies are important, and I'll go into that again for those of you who don't remember, Merrill Lynch's chairman was Don Reagan. And at the time, the money was going to Europe, to the mafia and the Turkish opium dealers. This chairman of Merrill Lynch was, 1979, was the chairman at that time. And then he went on to become the Secretary of the Treasury. And it turns out that the Treasury Department is supposed to investigate money skimming, money going overseas to mafia, and the Secretary of the Treasury's own brokerage firm was sending it over there to a man that was supposed to kill the Pope to escalate the Cold War. The New York Times, April 1st, 1986, said, a deposition was taken in Switzerland by Paul Waradil. That's the man that had been giving the trial information then and now for 2 years. He explained how pizza money from the United States went into Swiss accounts from Merrill Lynch to a Yasser Masalu. And at that time, we didn't know that that was Bekir Selek, the man who freed Aja and helped him. Waradil admitted collecting more than $11 million for this Turkish suspect, Musilulu, which means, again, that Merrill Lynch is putting money into Musilulu's pockets. The New York prosecution of the pizza connection claims that 22 defendants operated a mafia heroin ring in New York City. They laundered many millions of dollars, including $20 million, to Switzerland through the accounts of E.F. Hutton and Merrill Lynch. Now, George Bush's wife, Barbara Bush, her maiden name is Pierce. Her brother... He resigned just a short while ago, was chairman of E.F. Hutton. George Bush was former CIA director. His wife was allegedly in the CIA. Her brother was chairman of E.F. Hutton. The Secretary of the Treasury, who became chief of staff, was Merrill Lynch. And money was going from those two firms into Switzerland to Mr. Waradil. And he said in 1982 alone, $20 million was transferred from these firms to him, and Waradil picked up more than $11 million for Mr. Musilu, whose name is Oral Selik. $5 million went to his home in Zurich. Another $11 million was taken to another home in Lugano, Switzerland, and he was paid for the money for morphine base converted to heroin that fills the bodies of people in New York City who are getting AIDS, spreading AIDS, who can't get jobs, who are on heroin. It was coming in from this man to New York City, and then the money was going back right to them to buy guns for terrorists. The money paid Musilu was for 2,200 pounds of morphine base at one time. Paul Waradil was born in Turkey. He was a friend of Musilu. Franco Della Torre, and he testified in the trials in New York, would take bags of cash from E.F. Hutton and Merrill Lynch that they sent their own delivery. And in order to avoid taxes, the brokerage firm would take the money and secretly put it in Switzerland. In September 1982, and this is in the New York Times article that I have here, in September of 1982, and think of Don Reagan as Secretary of the Treasury and George Bush's brother-in-law, his brokerage firm's putting the money in. In September 82, Franco Della Torre had stopped going to New York City to get the money to put in the brokerage firms because an official of E.F. Hutton, that's George Bush's brother-in-law, is the chairman of Hutton, disclosed that the FBI, under William Webster, who's now CIA director, had disclosed to them and tipped them off that the FBI was getting interested in our account in the United States. Therefore, they decided to secretly transfer the money overseas. They didn't stop the money, and William Webster didn't go to the President of the United States and say, these two firms are involved. We better ask Bush about this. We better ask Don Reagan. What they did was tip the people off of what they were doing. and the Treasury Department is assigned to investigate these matters. I'll take a 1-minute break now because many of you taped this off the air.